Yeah, next case is number 20-2277, Brooklyn Brewery Corporation versus Brooklyn Brew Shop, LLC. Okay, Mr. Dabney.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This is an appeal from a consolidated opposition and cancellation proceeding involving the mark Brooklyn Brew Shop. I'm going to first discuss the board's three errors with respect to the opposition proceeding.
Could we talk about standing for a moment?
Sure.
With respect to the sanitizing classification?
Sure.
And, you know, in Phygenics and various other cases in the patent area, we've said explicitly that Congress can't confer Article III standing on someone who's not injured. It's hard to see why that same rule wouldn't apply in the trademark context. And so tell me what the injury is here to your client from the sanitizing registration.
Under the Supreme Court's decision in Lexmark, the issue is do we have a reasonable interest to be protected? And under the statute here, the statute in terms of requiring standing is, do we have a belief that we are injured? And this
Phygenics and our other cases in the patent area say the statute cannot confer standing unless there is a minimum Article III injury.
Okay.
And so what I'm asking you is put the statute to one side. What is the Article III injury? This is not a dilution case.
Sure. The Article III injury would be that if we own registrations for Brooklyn and we use the mark Brooklyn in commerce, if they get a registration for Brooklyn Brew Shop for cleaning sanitizers in Class 5, they could use that against us in another case if, for example, we extended our use to cleaning sanitizers.
Well, is there any indication that there's such a plan?
There may be such a plan. I mean, there.
No, but my question is there any indication in this record that your client has such a plan?
Well, we have sold the co-branding kits contain cleaning sanitizers. So I don't understand why.
We have a run of cases in the patent law context, again, that hypothetical possible future injury is not enough for Article III injury, in fact, now. In fact, we've dismissed a number of cases where competitors have said, we may enter this field in the future, but we don't have any definite plans. Why doesn't that precisely apply here?
Well, Your Honor, again, I mean, first of all, I'll say this is an argument that's being made on the first time on appeal. This is never.
Well, it's Article III standing.
I understand. I understand.
We can raise this anytime we want.
This court's decision in Australian, which I believe is the 2020 Federal Circuit decision that's referred to in our brief, talks about standing in terms of a reasonable belief. I don't believe that decision there refer or discuss the patent law cases. So if
that doesn't help you, that hurts you.
Why is that?
Whatever you try to get out of that case can't very well be seen as inconsistent or redefining the patent law cases.
Well, so, I mean, if that case required the actual damage, then that case was.
Well, they were selling the maybe not a great deal, but they were selling.
That's true. But even with respect to if you take away the cleaning sanitation, okay, the cleaning sanitizers in Class 5. If I can get back to the opposition proceeding, which was the opposition.
Can I just understand though those co-branded kits? Mm-hmm. that you all provided the recipes for, those were sold collectively, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So obviously whatever was sold as was sold by both.
That's correct. Okay. We sold the co-branded kits. I mean, that's one of that's the basis on which the board found acquiescence to the registration and the application. And we haven't challenged the board's finding of acquiescence.
Okay, so your point would be they can't have it both ways. That can't be acquiescence and yet not give you
standing. Exactly. So, again, getting back to the opposition, this is the key. This is a complicated case. It's just really important to understand this. The opposition involved the applicant's mark for Brooklyn Brew Shop. The applicant disclaimed Brew Shop and claimed Section 2F. That's acquired distinction.
I don't see that the disclaimer helps you. What the treatises say and what the cases say about disclaimers is that means that you can't complain about somebody using the word Brooklyn.
Your Honor,
wait, as a result of your registration. It doesn't confine us to consider only that aspect of the mark. In fact, the cases are quite clear that we have to consider the mark as a whole.
Your Honor, with respect to Section 2, the lack of acquired distinctiveness claim that we made, the board found that we made with respect to the application. This court in Yamaha and also in Cold War expressly held that the only issue in a claim which we alleged, the board found we alleged, the parties litigated for years, the parties argued at trial whether Brooklyn Brew Shop had acquired secondary meaning at the time of trial. The only issue is that issue. Had it acquired secondary meaning at the time of trial?
Wait.
The board never addressed that question.
I agree that the board never addressed that question. The question is whether it's relevant. We have the original registration. We have the opposition. Under the Morehouse Doctrine, if their original registration was valid, then that carries over to the application.
That's wrong. We respectfully submit that's wrong. That's our second.
Why is that wrong?
That's wrong, and this is, again, extremely important. We discussed this in our brief. The registration disclaims Brooklyn. So the presumption of validity that attaches to the registration does not attach to a disclaimed term. We cited the case law in our brief on that. Whereas the application claims Section 2F with respect to Brooklyn.
Okay, is that's your only basis for distinguishing Morehouse?
That's correct, Your Honor. Again, Morehouse was not raised below. The argument that was raised below with respect to why a inevitable likelihood of confusion should apply to the opposition proceeding was this Aquion case. And the Aquion case says if it's the same mark in the application or the same or substantially similar to the mark in the registration, then if the plaintiff delayed in challenging the registration, it can be held to have delayed in challenging the application. Here, the board found that the mark was substantially the same. We submit that's wrong as a matter of law because the application causes substantially more damage to us than the registration does. The registration, again, disclaims Brooklyn, so it doesn't which is an admission that the presumption does not apply to Brooklyn. So let me give you a hypothetical. If my client started to sell, brew kits, and the application did not turn into a registration, If the defendant sued my client based on the registration that's of record, that registration would have no relevance to the lawsuit against my client because the presumption of validity in the registration does not attach to Brooklyn because they voluntarily disclaimed Brooklyn in the registration. Whereas in the application, it's totally different. They disclaimed Brew Shop, and they claimed acquired distinctiveness under Section 2F with respect to Brooklyn. That means if the application is allowed to register, that will constitute presumption of validity with respect to Brooklyn, because Brew Shop has been disclaimed, and they're claiming Section 2F as to Brooklyn. So in that case, if my client then started to make or started to sell beer-making kits, they could sue my client based on their registration that they got from the application, and that registration would apply in that proceeding because that registration did not disclaim Brooklyn. It claims...
So what you're saying is that the Morehouse Doctrine doesn't apply because of the, as a result of the disclaimers, the scope of the protection, the scope of what they can get out of the newly registered mark is different from the old one.
That's correct. It's okay, different.
I understand the argument.
Let's
go back to the original registration, which was not a 2F registration. As I understand what the board found, they found that the thing was inherently distinctive. It was not descriptive, and therefore, with respect to the original registration, didn't go on to address the question of acquired distinctiveness. Why is that wrong?
Your Honor, with all due respect, that's not what the board did.
Okay. Tell me why.
Because what the board found, again, the registration disclaims Brooklyn Brew, does not disclaim Shop, and it was registered on the principal register.
You seem to be talking about something different than I am. What I'm saying is that the board found, with respect to the original registration, that the mark was, since it wasn't a 2F registration, was inherently distinctive, and it didn't need to, and that you hadn't rebutted that presumption, and therefore you lost with respect to the original.
That's not true, Your Honor. With all due respect, again, I would suggest that the board found that Brew Shop is generic. It made that finding. It said Brew Shop is a place where you can buy beer making kits. That's what it held.
Okay, let's assume I'm right and you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of the matter, right? If they found with respect to the original registration that it was a presumption that it was inherently distinctive,
yeah,
but you hadn't rebutted that, then you lose with respect to that aspect of the original registration, right?
That's correct, but I would point out though, Your Honor, since the board found that Brew Shop is generic, the only thing left in the registration, this is critical, the only thing left in the registration is Brooklyn, which is disclaimed, which means as a matter of statute, as pointed out in the Yamaha case, that's unregisterable matter for purposes of that case. It's descriptive of that case. So once the board found that Brew Shop is generic or merely descriptive, there's nothing left to support the registration. There's nothing left because they can't argue that Brooklyn was inherently distinctive because they disclaimed Brooklyn in the registration. That's the whole point. And so once the board found that Brew Shop was generic, it doesn't matter whether Brooklyn, it doesn't matter. There's nothing left to support the registration. Brooklyn is gone as a matter of statutory law. It cannot support a registration on the principal register that's not under 2F because they disclaimed it. It's not registrable.
Okay, your India rebuttal time was...
Okay, I apologize. Thank you.
Okay, we'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Mr. Marshall.
May it please the court, Sean Marshall for Brooklyn Brew Shop. Brooklyn Brewery has presented no colorable arguments on appeal to disturb the board's rulings with respect to the cancellation.
So what about their argument with respect to standing? They say that the effect of the second registration, or the Morehouse Doctrine, they say the effect of the second registration here is different from the first registration, and that both as a matter of a question of standing and as a question under the Morehouse Doctrine, that that makes a difference.
I think that's an incorrect reading of the Morehouse Doctrine.
Let's treat it as a standing question first. If, sure. If in fact this second registration has a different scope and a different impact, that suggests that maybe we should look at it differently, right?
I don't think that it does have a different scope and impact. The registration of a trademark provides you rights in the words as a whole. With a 2F registration, even though in the application, I think Brewshop is disclaimed and Brooklyn isn't, there are no 2F rights in just Brooklyn. Brooklyn Brewshop would have 2F rights in the entire mark as a whole, Brooklyn Brewshop.
Are you saying that disclaimers are meaningless? I mean, I have a hard time understanding how you morph from disclaiming Brooklyn to all of a sudden being able to claim Brooklyn.
I think for the purposes of this appeal, the disclaimers are irrelevant. I don't think that disclaimers are meaningless completely. I think that with respect to the disclaimers that were in the first mark, which I believe were Brooklyn and Brew, Brooklyn was voluntarily disclaimed, whereas Brew was disclaimed after a discussion with the examiner.
But they're meaningful with respect to Morehouse. I mean, Morehouse didn't address disclaimers, but that's because disclaimer wasn't at issue there.
So the Morehouse case talks about if there's a cancellation and an opposition, if the cancellation is upheld, you can't oppose a mark for essentially the same mark. Under the Jack Wolfskin case, the determination of whether a mark is essentially the same is viewed from the eyes of a consumer who has no idea whether different words are disclaimed. So I think for the purposes of that analysis, yes, the disclaimers are meaningless.
But with respect to the Morehouse Doctrine, with the second registration, you can go after somebody who's using Brooklyn for kits, claiming a likelihood of confusion, whereas you couldn't do that with respect to the original registration where you disclaimed Brooklyn. That's correct, isn't it?
I don't think it is exactly. Both registrations give you rights in the mark as a whole, nothing else.
Well, sure, but there's some impact of the disclaimer. As I understand it from the treatises, the impact of the disclaimer is that you can't claim a likelihood of confusion because somebody is using the disclaimed term. Isn't that correct?
I don't think that's correct. What's
incorrect about that?
The way I understand it is it's something to consider when you're doing the likelihood of confusion analysis. Now, if somebody came along and started a beer-making kit company and just called it Brooklyn, I think the disclaimer may have an impact in that, but I think it's irrelevant.
Okay, so that's the point. Under the Morehouse Doctrine, is that this second registration gives you something that the original one didn't. Under the original one, you couldn't go after somebody who was using Brooklyn for beer kits, but under the second registration, where Brooklyn's not disclaimed, you could.
Well, you still have to go through the likelihood of confusion analysis, which is comparing the marks as a whole, not the individual parts.
No, I mean you're barred from using Brooklyn as part of that analysis, right?
I don't think that's correct, but I think that it's a factor to consider in whether.
Basically saying the disclaimers are meaningless.
I don't think they are meaningless. I think that, for example, if Brooklyn Brew Shop tried to get a registration on the words Brooklyn Brew, it wouldn't be able to use its original registration as prima facie evidence that it has distinctiveness in that.
Okay, so there's a difference. So the question is, from the point of view of the Morehouse Doctrine, the second registration has some value that the first one didn't have. So it's not just a repeat of the original registration, which is the whole premise of the Morehouse Doctrine.
So the Morehouse Doctrine says that an opposer cannot object to essentially the same mark for essentially the same goods. The Jack Wolfskin case...
Well, this is the whole premise of the Morehouse Doctrine is you're not getting anything different with the second registration, whereas here the argument is you are getting something different with the second registration because Brooklyn's not displaying.
I don't think that it's that we are getting something different. I think it's that the opposer can't be injured by the additional registration, and here there is no additional injury to Brooklyn Brewery.
How is that possible when you're now saying that you can restrict someone from using the term Brooklyn?
I disagree that that's exactly what the not having a disclaimer on the word Brooklyn means. As the NRA National Data Corps case says, the presence or an absence of a disclaimer is irrelevant in the likelihood of confusion analysis. And with respect to the Morehouse Doctrine, it doesn't come into play with...
But it's not irrelevant with respect to who you could assert a claim against.
And I'm confused by all this. Can I just ask you, maybe this is completely irrelevant and not a good hypothetical, but suppose you have this, that you get this registration on the second mark for Brooklyn Brew Shop, where you've not disclaim Brooklyn, and you disclaim Brew Shop, and it's for beer making kits. And somebody wants to file a registration, and don't go into all these other objections because I don't know what they are either. Wants to file a registration for Brooklyn brew making kits. Can you, when you try to oppose their mark, or say you want to go after them for infringement? Let's just make it that. For making Brooklyn brew making kits, can you rely on the fact that they're using the word Brooklyn in their whole selling of goods, or is it just that your whole mark Brooklyn Brew Shop is gonna cause confusion with that? Does that make any sense? If it doesn't, I'm sorry.
I think the general premise. When you're doing the likelihood of confusion analysis, you look at the marks as a whole. In our case, it would be Brooklyn Brew Shop. When you look at the disclaimers, I think that is a factor to consider in whether you...
Well, you keep saying it's a factor to consider. I don't understand what you mean by that.
Sure.
Is it you can't consider it all, or you can consider Brooklyn in combination with the other two terms as likelihood of confusion, but you just can't look at Brooklyn and Brooklyn and say, look, they're both Brooklyn, so that's enough to establish a likelihood of confusion?
I don't think you could do that with the disclaimer, if there was a disclaimer or not. You have to look at the terms as a whole. Where I think it comes into play is in the likelihood of confusion analysis. Although you have to look at the words as a whole, you're allowed
you
to decide.
You can't argue in a likelihood of confusion analysis that Brooklyn would be confused with Brooklyn Brew Shop, having disclaimed Brooklyn, correct?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. Suppose we put aside, suppose we conclude that the Morehouse Doctrine doesn't apply here. What is the argument with respect to the opposition to the new application? As I understand it, since it's a 2F registration, you can't claim inherent distinctiveness, and you'd have to show acquired distinctiveness, and yet the board didn't rule on that question.
I agree that the board did not rule on that. I don't think it was an error for them to have not done it for the reasons that we described in their brief.
What, if we reject the Morehouse defense, mm-hmm. don't we have to remand to have them decide that question?
I think that is possible. The argument we made in our brief is that given that the only way that Brooklyn Brewery by the board was allowed to show on the scale from merely descriptive to highly descriptive was that it was merely descriptive under 2E1, and not that it was primarily geographically descriptive under 2E2, and the board found that it didn't show that it was merely descriptive. So our argument there was that since it couldn't be put on the scale, the Brooklyn Brewery failed to meet their initial...
Well, the board didn't find that because
I agree.
Right.
I agree.
Because that,
yes.
That's a
if,
bit of
if
a
it
statement.
Came off that we said that the board found that, I apologize. The board definitely
did not. All the
not.
Board said is this should have been under 2E2, even though your friend on the other side argues that no, it didn't have to just be under 2E2. That might have been a good argument that they could have made, but it's still just descriptive. Under 2E1.
I'm not understanding your question. I'm sorry.
That you don't, the board did not make the finding.
Yes.
All right? But they didn't say we're finding that it isn't descriptive. What they said is you have to go under the geographically descriptive because that's what we really think you mean to say. Right?
Well, I think they said that that any of that Brooklyn Brewery's arguments on why Brooklyn Brew Shop is descriptive all would have informed the case under 2E2, and none of their arguments informed 2E1. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure that's what they said, but they said this really is a 2E2 case, and we're not going to even look at 2E1.
I think you have it. I think you are correct that they sort of said that this really is a 2E2 case, but didn't consider it because it wasn't pled. But they did consider whether it met the requirements under 2E1 and found that the evidence didn't make out a 2E1 claim because there was no...
They didn't reach the acquired distinctiveness claim. If they had to find acquired distinctiveness, they didn't find it with respect to the new application.
You are correct. The board did not make that finding.
Could I ask a question about the judgment with respect to the disclaimer? It seems to me that with respect to the disclaimer, both parties agree that entitled them to a judgment that the other parts of the mark were gone, and yet the board didn't enter such a judgment. Shouldn't we send it back to have the board enter such a judgment?
So I disagree that they didn't enter the judgment. I think that they didn't explicitly say something, but I think the meat of what the board did is everything that Brooklyn Brewery was asking for.
But what's the harm in sending it back saying you have to clarify? You stipulated that a judgment.
Yeah, I don't know that there's
I'm not
a harm.
Sure why
I don't know
that
there's
point.
A distinction. But as we said in the brief, I'm not sure that this court has jurisdiction to do so once those goods were removed, that they're no longer part of the application.
Well, we certainly have jurisdiction to tell them to be clear about what they were doing, right?
I leave that to you. I think unless there are any more questions, I'll surrender the last minute.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Dabney?
Yes, Your Honor. So quickly, with respect to the opposition, on page 24 of our reply brief, we cite the cases that hold that the presumption of validity does not extend to disclaimed components of a registered mark. And so that will establish that the Morehouse doctrine doesn't apply here because they disclaimed Brooklyn in the registration. They're claiming 2F. And they didn't disclaim it in the application. Your Honor
asked... What's your response to the argument that, well, we're supposed to look at the mark as a whole, so therefore, even if it's disclaimed, we still get to look at it?
Well, you don't... If the cases that are cited at page 24 of the brief, including the decision from the Nebraska District Court, my recollection is that in that case kind of presents the hypothetical that Judge Hughes asked about. In that case, the plaintiff had a registration that disclaimed a term, and then the plaintiff sued another party based on infringement of that registration, and the court dismissed the claims for that were based the claims that were based on the registered mark, because the presumption of validity does not attach, and the registered mark does not attach to the disclaimed terms. And that's also here in McCarthy section.
I mean, your point is fairly simple, that the second registration would give them something that the first registration
absolutely
did.
They, if we, you know, start using Brooklyn, you know, on if we continue or sell beer kits, they can sue us based on the registration that would issue from the application. They could not based on the registration that exists now, because they disclaim Brooklyn. That, Your Honor, you asked, well, don't we have to then remand the opposition with respect to our claim that the mark lacked acquired distinctiveness? I would respectfully submit that if you decide that the Morehouse Doctrine does not apply, that you don't have to remand with respect to the Class 32 goods in the application, because the board essentially used the Morehouse Doctrine to require my client to prove inevitable confusion to prevail on its Section 2D claim in the opposition. It was wrong to do that because the marks are not the same. The registration.
That's just with respect to the likelihood of confusion, not with respect to the descriptive.
Right, that's right. But that ruling informed that was the basis of the board's decision to make us prove inevitable confusion in the opposition proceeding, when in fact we only had to prove a likelihood of confusion, because the law shows the marks are not the same. The registration is substantively different from the application. And so we should have only been required to prove a likelihood of confusion to prevail in the opposition proceeding with respect to the Class 32 goods. And as we explain in our brief, the board's own findings hold that there is a likelihood, or if you look at the likelihood of confusion factors, it found the marks are similar. The goods are related. That's beer making kits and beer. That the customers are similar, and that the goods travel in the same channels of trade. So if you agree with us that the application is substantively different than the registration, then the board erred in requiring us to prove inevitable confusion with respect to the app.
Well, but even if the board erred in requiring inevitable confusion, and even if we think that the board's other findings should result in a finding of likelihood of confusion, isn't it better to send it back and let the board make that decision in the first instance?
It's your discretion to do so. If I may, one last point is...
I think we're out of time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Daly. Thank you, Mr. Marshall.